Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. I'm your host for this evening's show, Henrietta Bird, and I'll be joined shortly by Glenn Greenwich in New York. I'm in Chicago, of course, and I welcome you to tonight's show. We have a wonderful, wonderful show prepared for you. You know that this is the month of March, and we acknowledge and honor great women in the African-American community, in all communities, actually. We are the International Black Summit, and we do acknowledge people of African descent. And we are a conversation that has been continuous since 1989, 1990, and in this conversation we discover things about ourselves that allow us to move to the next level, whatever that might be for us as individuals. We have an annual event every first weekend in August of every year where people come together of different backgrounds, different opinions, different views, and we come together to create our lives for the next year, and we go into a room, a very large room, depending on how many people are at the summit, and we engage in questions, and we explore different issues. And in that exploration, we get to clear ourselves of who we've been, check our belief systems. You know, we do a lot of work on ourselves. And as we do the work on ourselves, we are able to acknowledge, praise, and celebrate who we are as a people, and the contribution we have been and will continue to be to the world. What's available through the International Black Summit is a global shift in the conversation about who people of Black African descent are in the world. And so tonight on our talk show, as we do every week, the same time every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Central Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we start our talk show with the declaration of the International Black Summit, after which we will discuss the purpose of the summit and the purpose of the Youth Summit. One of the things you would like to know about the International Black Summit is that it has a very powerful youth conversation as well. And youth, of course, is we begin at 8 years old and continue on. In some countries, youth are over 21. In this particular country, it only goes to 21. But in other countries, it extends into the 30s. And so we acknowledge, you know, the youth at whatever age based on what country we're in. So you'll also get to hear about the purpose of the Youth Summit. What I'd like for you to do as you listen to the declaration of the International Black Summit is to remember that this declaration was written by a group of people who decided that they wanted to bring this technology to people of African descent. And they gathered together in the city of Atlanta. And in that city, they determined, they listened to hear what life was saying to them as far as creating the International Black Summit. And they created a dialogue that we call the Declaration of the International Black Summit. So if you would take a really close listen and see where you find yourself in this declaration. The Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7, 1991. Chicago, Illinois, March 17, 2013. North, south, east, west. Above, below, within. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. And that's the Declaration of the International Black Summit. And it's a piece of work where we can go when we're confused about things and kind of ask ourselves, okay, where am I? You know, am I building economies? Am I funding our community? You know, am I maintaining wellness of being in my body? Am I empowering the youth? You know, there are so many questions in this declaration, and I invite you to go to the website, blacksummit.org, and read through the declaration over and over and over again, because it's a very empowering document. And it will always guide you back to yourself so that you can take a look and see just where you are. The next thing I'd like to share with you is the purpose of the International Black Summit. And the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. I repeat, it provides an opportunity for participants. So you have to participate in the conversation. It doesn't mean that you have to talk, but you do have to participate. And one of the major ways that we participate in this conversation is listening. And so we listen life. We listen each other so that we can clearly hear what life is saying to us. There are ways that we can listen so intently to one another that we can clearly hear what life is saying to me through whoever's speaking. So listening is another distinction that we have in the International Black Summit. Next is the purpose of the Youth Summit, because as I said earlier, we have a very powerful Youth Summit. And youth in America is 21 and under. We begin at 8 years old, but in other countries, youth goes all the way up to in your 30s, you're still considered youth. So as I said earlier, it depends on where we are. But the purpose of the Youth Summit, and the youth wrote this in their language, it says, we exist to facilitate the connection, self-expression, and empowerment of young people of African descent around the world. We are young people making our visions real in our community and exemplifying the principles of youth, transformation, love, and possibility as a powerful approach to the universe. And that's the purpose of the Youth Summit. We invite you to Ottawa, Canada, the first weekend in August. We begin August 1st, which is that Thursday, and there's a prerequisite that will be held on that day, and then the next day we go into the room and the conversation begins. Of course, that conversation follows the Thursday night opening ceremony, which is always fabulous. And when I say fabulous, it's just like, oh my God, it's just what wherever we are, it's the community where we are. And last year, in 2012, we were in Birmingham, and we heard from people who were a part of many of the marches that took place in Alabama. Oh God, it was just really, really powerful. Some of the ministers that were there, some of the people who were children who participated in that children's march. So the opening ceremony on Thursday night is always an invitation into the community wherever we are called to go. And this year, we've been called to go to Ottawa. And so Thursday night will be the opening event. If you need to take the prerequisite, then you will. It will be great for you to be there Thursday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern time, of course. And you can also take the prerequisite from now until August. Go to the website blacksummit.org, and it will let you know as the prerequisites occur in your area. So, Glenn, are you with us?
I certainly am.
All righty. And we have a wonderful, wonderful show prepared for you tonight and next week also. This is Mars, so we are acknowledging wonderful, wonderful women. And anything else, Glenn? You were in D.C., right? You went to the... was it a summit share or was it a prerequisite?
There was actually a summit share in Baltimore.
In Baltimore,
and,
right.
There was a summit share of both a youth and adult summit share that the Mid-Atlantic team put together. And we had 17 young people and we had 15 adults participating. And so for those of you who don't know, what a share is an opportunity to find out a little bit about what the International Black Summit is about, what the declaration stands for, the same declaration that Henrietta has been speaking to, and we engage it as a community. And so with the young people, what we do is we actually have them read it and have them point out the section of the declaration that calls them, that speaks to them. Mm-hmm. And we actually had them prepare a presentation based on that information, the declaration and also the distinctions that we have. So we have distinctions in the summit, which are the tools that we use to navigate ourselves through all the emotional encounters that we have as human beings. And in so doing, we are able to stay on track and keep focused around our vision and our purpose. So that's so we give them some tools, and they look at the declaration and actually come up with a presentation. So it was quite invigorating to see the young people do that, just being exposed to the information for the first time, maybe about 2 hours prior to their presentation. So it was real interesting, and I went down from New York, and Joyce from who's the other co-leader is came down from Trenton, New Jersey. So we rode down and had a day with the young people in Baltimore. So it was very, very fulfilling. Back to you, Henrietta.
That's great. That's great. That Mid-Atlantic team was another powerful team. I was talking about the Canadian team earlier, and I just the Canadians are so much fun. They're just so much fun when they come to the summit. You know, they come with the intention of getting something that's going to help them, but they certainly do have fun in the process. So I know that we will have a wonderful time in Ottawa. And after we get through Women's Month, we're going to have some of the people from the Ottawa team on. And I'd like to acknowledge the Mid-Atlantic team for the work that they've done, you know, this past weekend, having that summit share. So congratulations to them as well. They've been working really hard in that area. So, Glenn, when you get a moment, or maybe we'll do it next week. I was going to say we could go in depth a little bit about, you know, what the youth are looking to do this year inside of the question. And the question for everybody is, for this year, people always ask us, what's the question this year, you know? And the question this year is, what is available when I notice my trigger, be with what is, and trust that it provides me to my vision fulfilled? I left out a word, access. It provides me access to my vision fulfilled. Let me repeat it. What is available when I notice my trigger, be with what is, and trust that it provides me access to my vision fulfilled? And we'll talk a little bit more about that, you know, as the show goes on. I want to ask if our guest is on, if she would press the number one button. And, yes, she is. And so I want to really get into this interview because this is someone that you heard me talk about her a couple of weeks ago because she received this wonderful award from Black Enterprise. I'll let her talk about it. But I want you all to meet her. Her name is Mrs. Deborah Gray Young. And she's a Chicago, she's a Chicagoan by way of the Bronx, New York, Glenn. So, so I want to, I really want to get into her interview as quickly as possible so we give her as much time as necessary. And
Well, her mic is open up.
Yeah, her mic is open, and I will just ask everybody else if you would mute your phone because we're getting a little background noise. So, Deborah?
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you so much. Let me just start out by saying thank you so very, very much. I tried to claim you, but then I forgot that you were from Glenn's neck of the woods.
Yep, from the BX.
Right. So good evening and welcome to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. And
yes, a good evening to you and thank you for having me.
Thank you. And please meet Glenn Greenwich. And he's from Jamaica.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Hi there.
Okay. So let's get started. Let's just get started. Now let me just tell you a little bit about how I know Deborah and I attend the same church. And so we've known each other for years, like years. But Deborah, you heard me mention Deborah back in October, because the day after I had been to her house, I came on and told you about this wonderful party I attended. And Deborah is the person who has the party once a year. She gathers friends together and we just solve all of the world's issues in that one night. So, and it's just a wonderful celebration in October, which is her birthday month, along with many of her other friends. So, Deborah, I would like for you just to start off by telling the listeners just a little bit about who you are.
Well, sure. So thank you again for having me. And as Henrietta said, we've known each other for more years probably than we care to count. I am originally from the Bronx, the BX. That's where I grew up. I was born in Harlem, raised in the Bronx, and went to public school as well as public university. So I am a product of the City College of the City University of New York, alma mater of Colin Powell.
Mm.
And I started out as a journalism major. So that was my intent to be a writer. But my very, very first job was as a receptionist for a magazine in New York. And instead of looking over the editor's shoulder, which is what I was supposed to be doing, I became totally fascinated with what the director of research was doing. And so that really, really sort of changed the trajectory of my career path. And that was almost 40 years ago. I just did the math after I talked to you earlier. And so my first job was in 1973. I know I'm dating myself, but I started as a kid. In fact, I was still in college. I was going to school at night. And so it's been quite a while, a long time. But to paraphrase a former Chicago Cub, Sammy Sosa, I like to say, advertising been very, very good to me.
Okay.
So that's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
And so you started in New York, and and how did you make your way to Chicago?
Oh, okay. Good question. I started in New York. I started, as I said, at a magazine, and learned how to interpret research. Had a wonderful research director that I worked under who taught me how to read research and how to read data and how to interpret it and translate it into sales letters and reports, and I became totally fascinated with that. And when I left there, I went to an advertising agency as an assistant buyer, and that started my trek down the media path versus the journalism path. And after about, I guess, 10 or 12 years, I got a call one day. An agency in Chicago was interested in talking to me to head up a team for them. And I had no interest in Chicago because it's cold in Chicago. And I really wanted to go to Atlanta. But long story short, I came to Chicago and interviewed for the job, was not interested in the job, told them point blank I was not interested in the job, and so I interviewed them. And by the time I finished interviewing them, I was very, very interested in the position. And about a month later, moved here. And I've been here ever since. And that's been about 20-some-odd years.
That's really interesting. So when you had just moved here when I met you, probably.
That's very true. I had only been here not quite a year.
Okay.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And so you took that position, and I'm actually tracking how you got to today. You know, how you got to where all of the things we talked about. You know, how you got there. So you took that position after talking yourself into it.
Literally. So one of the things that sort of transpired when I first started out in the business from the advertising agency side, I really worked on all of the non-cool, non-sexy stuff, right? So I worked on agricultural business, on what's called B2B or business-to-business accounts or industrial advertising accounts, all of the non-sexy stuff. But I actually like that because it really kind of gives you insight into how a lot of the industries work. And then I transitioned to an agency that specialized in advertising to the African-American consumer segment, and that agency was Mingo Jones, and it was headed up by a gentleman named Frank Mingo, and his partner was Carolyn Jones. And Carolyn was an award-winning copywriter that actually was responsible for a very famous tagline for Kentucky Fried Chicken called, and the tagline was, "We do chicken right." And so I went to work for them, and that was how I transitioned into consumer advertising, but more specifically African-American consumer advertising and marketing. And that really was, again, another really critical turning point for me, and that was how I got noticed in Chicago. And the agency that recruited me to Chicago was Burrell Communications, which at the time was one of the largest, and they were looking for someone to head up media for their McDonald's account, which was at the time the agency's largest account. So that's how I made my way not only to Chicago, but it was probably the second chapter, if you will, in my career in terms of, you know, specializing in the African-American consumer market segment. And those two things helped really form the foundation for, you know, what I went on to do for the next, you know, 20-some-odd years, but really helped me to be positioned in the marketplace as somewhat of an expert, and I use the word in quotes, on not only on this consumer, but the media that serves it. And part of what was really, really important for me was that clients understand the legitimacy of African-Americans as consumers. Too often they had been just sort of dismissed or written off, or really clients that just, you know, bought into the stereotypes that they would see. And so one of the things I used to tell clients all the time is, you know, stop watching the 10 o'clock news, because if the only thing you ever knew about black people was what you saw in the news, you would swear none of us had any sense and didn't have any home training. And which, of course, we all know nothing could be further from the truth. And for a great many people who are not from our community, the only perspective that they have about us as a people is what they see on the news. And since then, of course, you know, we've gotten a lot more programming, but I'm sorry to say that a lot of that programming also doesn't tell the best about us and show the breadth and depth of who we are as a people. So it still is somewhat of a struggle and a challenge to get clients to see not only the validity of this consumer segment as a business opportunity, but just all of the richness of this community.
Glenn, jump in whenever. I just, you know, I just keep thinking of these, the consciousness, you know, that's one of the things that came to me. And Deborah's, you know, Deborah's in the conversation of whole and complete. And as you talked about moving from New York to Chicago and then moving from one company to another company, I was just wondering if you remember what state of consciousness you were in at the time that you made those moves, or even the one from New York to Chicago. Was there anything like going on in your life that had you that you're conscious of that had you make that change?
So a couple of things. One, it was an adventure for me. I never intended to stay 20-something years. I literally wanted to just have the experience of living somewhere else for a couple of years. And that was my intent, was to come here to Chicago, stay for 2 years on the outside three, and head back to New York. And, in fact, the company that I left, the president said to me, just, you know, when you're ready to come back, just call me and let me know what flight you're on. And I said, great, you know, because there's nothing like being able to just go and test something knowing that, you know, you've got a backup plan already in place. But two things happened. One, he made his transition shortly after that, about maybe a year or two after that. And the other thing that happened was I really liked Chicago. And it's a big town. It's, you know, Chicago likes to think of itself as a city, but it really is just a big old town. And it was very comfortable for the most part and very easy to live here. Now, Chicagoans by nature don't like New Yorkers, but, you know, I got around that. The other thing that was kind of going on was there was a lot of stuff going on with my brother and my nephews and stuff, and I just really, really wanted to put some distance between myself and them so that they could have enough room and distance to figure it out for themselves, as opposed to always counting on Aunt Deborah to, you know, to figure it out and get it done for them. And so that was the other thing. But it was an adventure for me.
Okay, good. And so you moved to the next company, and were there any like challenges that you remember?
Yes. One of the challenges was that apparently I was replacing someone who a lot of people liked. And, of course, I was not aware of all of the dynamics of that when I accepted the position. So there was a little bit of sort of resentment, a little bit of anxiety, I think, on the part of other people when I came into the position. But, you know, I was so busy and really hit the ground running that I didn't really have a lot of time to pay attention to it or to focus on it. And I did have a couple of friends, a couple of people that I knew here in Chicago that were from New York. So that those, you know, turned out to be the people that I formed the closest relationship with, because I knew them before I even, you know, came to Chicago. But, you know, as I said, as time went on, I decided that excited. I think I was in Chicago maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years, when I decided I was going to stop apologizing for where my mother gave birth to me. And that just sort of changed everything.
Okay. Now, how many positions have you had since you've been here?
Probably four. So I was at Burrell for 3 years, and then a really good friend of mine in New York and I formed our own company. And we formed a company that syndicated television programming as well as did the marketing of that programming for independent producers. And so we did that for a while. I worked for myself for quite a while, actually, but I didn't like the sales side of the business. And my hat goes off to anybody who works in sales to pay their mortgage and rent and put their kids through school, because that just requires a different kind of temperament and a special breed of person, of which I am not. But it's good to know how you're wired and how you're not wired, and I'm just not wired to that. And so I tended to stay in the background and be more of a strategist, which is really what my strong suit is. And I did that for a while, and then I went back into the agency business. And so from there I went to RJ Dale, and from there to a promotional sales promotion marketing company. And so I'm probably four or five positions overall. I'm back at Burrell now, as you know. It's my second tour of duty, heading up the Toyota business. And I've been there now 5 years. So it's been pretty good. I've never not been busy.
Do you feel that every step you've taken, you've learned a major lesson? Like, you know, is there something specific you learned at the first place and something specific you learned at the second place?
Yeah, so I don't know about major, but certainly every situation gives you an opportunity to learn and learn in two ways, right? So you obviously learn about, you know, the company, the client, whatever the business dynamic and the situation is that's in front of you. But more importantly, you learn about yourself. You learn something about yourself, either in terms of how you interact with people or how you adjust to change or how do you take in information and use it. I mean, there's always these constant lessons that you can learn about yourself if you are, you know, kind of open and paying attention and on the lookout for those things. So for sure, a tremendous amount of learning, a tremendous amount of growth. You know, again, if you're, you know, open to paying attention to sort of how the universe shows up.
If you're paying attention to it, right. Let me just take a moment to say that this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we are interviewing, Glenn and I, I'm Henrietta, are interviewing Ms. Deborah Gray Young. And Deborah, you are can you state your title?
I'm the media director on the Toyota business at Burrell Communications.
Okay. And Deborah was recently honored by Black Enterprise. That is in, like, I think I saw it about 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been, is it in print?
Yes, it is in the magazine, the January, February issue of Black Enterprise.
Okay.
There's a profile that they were gracious enough to do a profile on myself. As well as a host of really dynamic Black women. It's really an honor just sort of to be in the group with these women. My grandmother used to always say to me that you are judged by the company you keep.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow, she could see me now.
She would be proud.
She would be proud, yep.
Right, oh, she is proud. Yeah, she
is. The women represented in that issue of the magazine was just phenomenal, just phenomenal. And the I had an opportunity to go to the Women of Power conference, which was in Orlando, and that was really, really good as well, and got a chance to meet some really, really phenomenal women of color there.
Okay. Well, I have just a couple of more questions about your work at Burrell, and then I want to check in with Glenn, and then I want to kind of move into what's next for, you know, like what's next for Deborah. But you just kind of mentioned that you were over a particular account with Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, I would say that's kind of a big account, Deborah, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, it's the agency's second largest account. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, can you just, like, tell us what your day is like? And you said over the media account?
Yes. So I'm the media director, and so I have the privilege of heading up a team of five other media professionals, and our responsibility is to develop the media strategy for Toyota for the African-American consumer market. So essentially what that means is we figure out, you know, what television programs, what magazines, what online properties, what mobile, you know, properties, you know, that the brand should be advertising in. And, you know, that's a real oversimplification of it, because it's a tremendous amount of research that we look at and analyze in order to come up with, you know, the ultimate recommendation. But that is essentially, you know, what we do. Now, in terms of giving you a sense of what my day is like,
mm-hmm.
no 2 days are ever alike. I've never had the same day twice. At any given time, we are probably managing somewhere around 50 relationships. Relationships meaning with our media partners. We spend quite a bit of time in meetings and discussions and conversations with media partners. And so media partners can be, you know, BET or Tom Joyner or Johnson Publishing, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on. But that's, you know, a typical day will involve us meeting with a combination of, you know, media partners, client meetings, as well as just internal team meetings to just make sure we're all on the same page as we move towards, you know, executing a media plan.
Mm-hmm. And so you determine, your team determines whether or not you will advertise in a certain arena or not.
Yes.
Have you ever made any decisions you wish you hadn't made?
No, not really. We have a pretty good track record. Mm-hmm. We're pretty good at vetting properties and programs on the front end. We're usually pretty good at that. We have a content criteria that we kind of adhere to. So then there have been a couple of things, and usually, you know, if I take a look at it and I don't like it, I'll pull the advertising. But for the most part, no, we have a pretty good track record with making the right choice. I will say this, though. we are very, very careful not to place the brand in any environments that are really disparaging or negative or degrading, not just to Black folk, but to anybody. So, you know, any programming that certainly uses the N-word, any programming that uses the B-word, we stay clear of. And that works well for us. And part of it is, even though some of those programs may do very well in the ratings, they have what we call a negative halo. And so what that means is when people are having conversations about these programs, it's never good conversation, right? It's always about how dysfunctional the people are or how crazy the people look and, you know, and things like that. And so those kind of environments we like to stay out of because we don't want to be in the negative halo of the discussion that's taking place.
Oh, that's interesting, and it's also good to hear. You know, that's really nice to hear that you all are so careful about that. Let's just take a short break for a moment, and this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and you are listening to Ms. Deva Gray Young of Burrell Communications. I invite everyone to blacksummit.org, to the website, and take a look at the declaration, the purpose, and the youth purpose of the International Black Summit. Also, I invite you to register for the annual event. And the annual event is August 1st through the 4th, 2013, and it is in Ottawa, Canada this year. So please join us in Ottawa. Our question this year is, what is available when I notice my trigger, be with what is, and trust that it provides me access to my vision fulfilled? And we explore that question all year round. I invite everyone to go to blacksummit.org. Also, the call-in number for this show is 646-716-9827. If you have a question for Deborah, just press the number 1 button and it will raise your hand and we will turn your mic on. We would love to take your questions and we'll continue.
I've got a question for Ms. Gray Young.
Okay.
What was it like being the chairperson of the Multicultural Media Committee of the American Association of Advertising Agencies? What was that like for you?
So, great. Good question. I haven't thought about that in quite a while. That was pretty interesting. The 4As, as you may or may not know for your listeners who are not familiar with the industry, is a trade organization for ad agencies in the Americas. And one of the things that they really needed to start to do was to address some of the challenges that were taking place with media, and so that was a pretty interesting position to be in. It's a volunteer position. I held that position while I was also the director of media and strategic services for EMARS Communications. But what it allowed me to do was to help the 4As gain some perspective on what the challenges were for media in general, but more particularly for the discipline of media coming out of ethnic agencies, so not just African-American, but Hispanic and Asian agencies as well. And there were some challenges that were unique to agencies that specialize in those kinds of niche audiences. And so it was rewarding to be able to help this larger body, if you will, kind of understand the some of the challenges and nuances of some of the smaller agencies that that service this, a smaller consumer population. And I had the opportunity also to provide some input on the agendas for some of, for a couple of the conferences that they did. They do an annual media conference. So it was interesting work, and I think provided the organization with some key insight.
Yeah, thank you. One other question. The law that went into place, I think it was the second term of the Bush administration, that allowed ownership of to be able to monopolize the media, and that is to own both the television, radio, newspaper in a locale. What impact would you say it has for the African-American market, if any?
Well, you know what? That's a really, really interesting question for a couple of reasons. One, when that law was passed, or that ruling was passed way back when, the business of media was dramatically different than what it is today, right? So, the ability back then to be able to own a radio station or a television station and a newspaper gave a company, let's say the Tribune Company or the New York Times, or Fox is even a better example, to own major media channels in a market. But today, the dynamics have changed dramatically. So the newspaper business is literally dying on the vine. And part of it is because when the Internet was introduced, it caught everybody off guard in terms of just how pervasive the Internet was going to be and just how critical it was going to become as a communication vehicle. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the advent of cable television has absolutely exploded, and now you add to that all of the other ways that you can watch anything, right? So you don't ever have to sit in front of a television again.
Right.
You can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your iPad. And so the convergence of all of these things has dramatically changed the business model for everybody. And it is becoming extremely difficult for even major companies to continue to see the kinds of, one, revenue, and two, profit that they're used to seeing. And so if you follow any of this at all in the business press, you've seen some really dramatic moves just in the last couple of months, the most recent of which is Time Warner getting rid of all of its magazines except for three titles, right?
Right.
The month before that, what's her name? The cooking lady. Martha Stewart rolled up a number of magazine titles and is looking to do more of a digital play. So when you look at the dynamics in the marketplace, it has just changed everything dramatically. Now, having said all of that, with the struggles that even the major media companies are having, the impact that it had on African-American-owned media has been devastating. And that is because they were already behind from a technology standpoint. And so now, like, for instance, the companies that own radio stations, radio listenership is on the decline. So if you went out and bought a radio station for, I don't know, $60 million, let's say 10 years ago, it's probably worth not even half that now. And so the ability to be able to generate enough revenue to not only, you know, stay in business, but to pay off the debt is, just becomes increasingly more difficult. So the landscape has changed dramatically. We spend an inordinate amount of time with a lot of our partners, just sort of providing, you know, some counseling, if you will, on how to navigate that and, you know, some other things that they can do to sort of remain viable. But it's a very dynamic landscape at this point. Every day things change. And so, you know, what we're looking at right now today is definitely different from 90 days ago.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. That's good. Mm-hmm. Back to you, Henrietta. Henrietta? Well, you know, I was wondering about that because I wasn't sure. I knew it impacted the African American community, but I wasn't sure to what degree. And given they were already behind the curve, it's pretty tragic.
Yeah. So it's an excellent question, and I'll just add one other thing to that sort of that mix, if you will. So the other thing is that there's been somewhat of a retraction, if you will, from this consumer segment by marketers, right? So whereas, you know, 15 years ago, you know, there was a lot more emphasis and a lot more marketing directed to African Americans. And now marketers have sort of pulled back on that a little bit and really sort of relying on a broader media channels in order to accomplish that. So as a result of that, a lot of the African-American-owned media channels are not realizing as much ad revenue as they have previously. So you have that. Two, the audience consumption of media in terms of African Americans, is all over the place. So, you know, it's still television, it's still radio, but very much online and very much on mobile. What it takes to have the infrastructure to deliver messages and content digitally is a different business model than what it would take to deliver it over television or deliver it for print. The key difference is the business model is different. It costs more, but the ad revenue, the scale of that is less. So the CPM might be $2 for digital versus, you know, for a magazine it could be $35, and CPM just means a cost per thousand. So the business model calls for more investment by media companies, but the rate structure generates less revenue. So it's a really, really quite precarious situation that most media companies find themselves in, and that would be for general market as well as African American.
Wow, thank you. That's good.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I have a new phone, so I couldn't find the mute button. I'm still learning. I put myself on mute and I couldn't get off. But anyway, that was really interesting. I mean, that was really, really interesting. I have 100 other questions now, but I want to move into, Deborah, what you are doing. Like, what's next? I know, you know, like, just what's next for you? Without me going into detail, I just want you to share so people know if they need to reach you or, you know.
Sure. So thank you for that. I know we've just got literally a minute left. And so my next chapter, when I decide to flip the page, I am going into coaching. So I'm going to leverage all of the years of work that I've done and the success that I've had to be a certified professional coach working with people who are transitioning from one chapter to the next in terms of their life and or career. And so that I'm very much looking forward to doing that, doing some of that now. It's about almost at capacity, with clients now. That's just how well it's been going. But yeah, but people can reach me. My website is CoachDGrayYoung.com. You can go to my website. You can call me right from the website, as a matter of fact, or send me an email. But again, you know, they can go to my website and can read all about what I'm up to. For my next chapter, and I don't know when I'll flip the page, flip the chapter on that permanently. It won't be tomorrow for sure, but when I do, it will be coaching full time. Right now, I'm just doing it part time and really loving helping people tap into their power and move their lives forward. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful.
Okay.
I do hope you'll come back, because there's so many things that I think you have to share, you know, with people. I mean, just for us to know that there, you know, that companies can determine, I mean, they can make a decision where they're going to advertise and where they're not going to advertise. And, you know, you hear all of these stories about, you know, they do it here for the money, as if, you know, as if they can't say no. But what I heard you say is that you all are very careful about where you advertise, and, you know, you make sure that it doesn't misrepresent a culture. You know, so I was really, really glad to hear that, and a lot of the other things that you said. Glenn, were you trying to say something a minute ago?
No, I was just really appreciative of the work that you've done, and really just acknowledge the wealth of knowledge that you are and the contribution that you've had in impacting the media, and of course that's one of the things that we talk about in the International Black Summit is impacting the media. So you're somebody who's been in it, lived in it in the day-to-day environment to impact it. So I just want to thank you for all the battles that you've won for us.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. You're welcome. But I tell you something that everybody can do, though, when you see something on television that you don't like, you have to write.
Okay.
You have to write, because that's what they respect. We tend to be quiet and just sort of suffer in silence. But when you see things on television that are disparaging or insulting, you have to write the network or the television station or the radio station or the magazine or whatever it is. And let your voice be heard.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Deborah.
It's been my pleasure.
The award, the name of the award you received?
Yes, so it was from Black Enterprise Magazine, and it was the top advertising and marketing executive for 2013. And it was really kind of cool, because that's the second time I've received that award. So that was nice.
That's great. That's great. Congratulations again. And please come back another time and share with us, because I see so much like that's in the declaration that you speak to, you know, at a different level. So I really do hope that you will come back to us another time and share at a, you know, around something, you know, something else that we're working on.
It would be my pleasure.
Thanks, Deborah. Once again, this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we have been in a wonderful interview with Deborah Gray Young, and she will be back, and we'll be back next Sunday. Please go to blacksummit.org and register for the summit, the annual event in Ottawa, Canada. We're going to sign off now, because we've passed time, and we look to talk to you again next Sunday. God bless.
Peace and blessings out.